WBEZ is supported by Chicago Humanities, presenting live events October 4th at Illinois Tech with Kate McKinnon, Nate Silver, Angela Davis with Nicole Mitchell's Black Earth Ensemble, disability advocate Molly Burke, plus Bronzeville History Tours with Sherman Dilla Thomas. Tickets for these events and more conversations on arts, culture, and current affairs at chicagohumanities.org.
Anyways, Captain James Lovell, thank you so much for agreeing to chat.
It's good to see you, and we're down here at Jay Lovell's in Highwood, and sort of a gloomy day, but we'll live.
Yeah, we'll survive. It's almost summer. So, you were born in Cleveland, raised in Milwaukee, right? You want to explain a little bit about your upbringing and your childhood?
Well, yes, I was born, we lived in Parma, Ohio. Obviously, I was born in a hospital in Cleveland, but I only stayed there a year, know nothing about that place. And then we eventually moved into Pennsylvania, and then finally into Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where the family was in the heating business. And I grew up there through high school, junior high, and then 2 years at Wisconsin before I eventually went to the Naval Academy and graduated from the Naval Academy.
Okay. And sorry, I'm going to put some headphones on here real quick that I should have done to begin with. Let me see. Okay. And so explain your childhood a little bit. I read that one time you noted that kids your age either like dinosaurs or rockets, right? And or planes, and because it was sort of the post Lindbergh era, right?
Well, see, I was born in 1928, and in 1927 Charles Lindbergh made that famous trip across the ocean. So boys of at my age through the 30s, airplanes were the big thing. And I built model airplanes, solid models, and trying to do flight models and things like that. And so in reality, in the 30s, as I grew up going into high school, I really wanted to be in aviation in some aspect.
Great. And obviously the Naval Academy ultimately enabled that.
Well, my uncle was graduated from the Naval Academy in 1913, and he was the 58th Naval Aviator. Consequently, when he come to talk to us, he tells about flying on those biplanes on, the early aircraft carriers and things like that. And so that was my initial, desire, was to sort of follow him.
Okay. And so faith-wise, explain how you were raised. You're Presbyterian, is that right?
That's right. I was sort of a loose Presbyterian, but my father died when I was 11. So my mother and I lived in just a little one-room apartment up in Milwaukee, but I pretty much on my own, but I got involved in Boy Scouts. And I went through the Boy Scout various merit badges and ranks and things like that. And one of the things that I was required to do in those days, and I still think it's there, is you have to maybe get a little bit of religion and do something with the local church or something like that. Well, in Milwaukee, we were Presbyterian by chance, I guess, because my mother started out to be Lutheran. Mm-hmm. But there was an old Presbyterian church downtown Milwaukee, a sort of a red brick tall building, just at the entrance now to the overpasses that they have. And I went down there. I thought I'd go down there because I had a friend that went down there. So that's how I started really becoming a good Presbyterian. I ended up in the choir. That started my religious life.
Okay. So pretty much church every Sunday growing up because of that?
Well, off and on, because I changed around. I went to Whip Madison, the Boy Scouts. I was still in high school at that time, and then Madison, and then I would try to get to church when I could. And then, at the Naval Academy, there was a requirement. You had to attend the church service. It was non-denominational, And we had a beautiful chapel at the academy, and we would just march to church, you know, and sit there. Or if you desire to go out in the town, my roommate was Episcopalian, and they would march out in the town to the Episcopal church. They were, you know, you could do that if you wanted to. And so I got, you know, more involved with religion at that time. It's an interesting story. When I was with my getting ready to get married, because in high school I met my future wife. She was a freshman. I was a junior. I invited her to the prom. And then eventually over 7 years, we couldn't get married in the Naval Academy. Over 7 years, we were getting married just the day that I graduated. But the chapel, when we decided to get married, was already full. Consequently, my roommate, who was attending the Episcopal church out in town, an ancient old church, some 300 years old, I thought, well, I'll go out with him and go to the Episcopal church. And so I started. And then one day when I felt I had enough courage, I got to the minister and I said, look, I'd like to get married here the day of graduation. Do you think that's possible? He said, well, oh, sure, sure. And he said in the course of the conversation, you're Episcopalian. I said, no, in reality, I'm Presbyterian. Oh, okay, well, your wife's Episcopalian. No, in reality, she's Lutheran. Well, he said, well, why do you want to get married in the Episcopal church? I said, my roommate's Episcopalian. He's going to be best man. That's this is the best place to go.
Right. It worked out.
Yeah, worked out.
That's great. Well, explain. You were in space four times. Is that right? Four official missions?
Made four flights. Gemini 7. These are Earth orbital. Gemini 12. And then Apollo 8, of course, to the moon. And then ended up at Apollo 13.
Okay. There was one historian I saw a reference to said that one of the Soviet cosmonauts said that he didn't see God in space, but that you guys, when you were up there, you and Anders and Borman saw signs of him everywhere. Is that true?
Well, he is. Space is infinite, as we still know it. And in reality, that's true. But the effects and all the relation of God is back down here on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did the experience? You know, when Bill Anders, I read how space sort of altered. He was raised, you know, believing in God, and I believe it was Catholic, and it sort of shook. It seemed to shake his faith a little bit, and really raise a lot of questions. Did it do anything similar to you?
Well, I was not as religious in the beginning as Bill was, and that Bill had a lot of questions about some ways that the Catholic Church was going, and of course being in a Protestant nature, I was more of a liberal thinker. And of course, over the years, I had a lot of different thoughts about what I saw on Apollo 8, the relationship between life, humans, and spirituality, and just what are the relations between the two.
Do you find it, so many people find science and religion and faith incompatible. What about you?
Well, I disagree. I disagree. I look at it in a different way, though. First of all, everything here, there's a beginning and an end to everything. Everything you see, this table we're at right now, had a beginning. It was built. And then one day, sometime, either it will break or it'll get too old or it'll be destroyed. Humans, of course, have a beginning and an end. The Earth has a beginning and an end. The sun is halfway through its life. And when it dies and becomes a cold, this Earth is going to die too. Everything has a beginning and an end except space. Space, as far as we can see, does not have an end. You know, I always say, would someone please tell me how far is up? and I never get an answer. And I've read a lot.
A long way.
Yeah, a long way. I've read a lot on cosmology. I've read about black holes and things like this and, you know, the Big Bang and how probably our universe got started. And there's some pretty good scientific explanations for that. And we're slowly, you know, getting more knowledge of the formations of things. But in reality, when I saw the Earth as it is really just 240,000 miles away, I got a new perspective on life itself.
Such as? What was it?
Well, I could put my thumb up to the window, and I've said this thousands of times in talks to people, but when I put my thumb up to the window when I was orbiting the moon, just 240,000 miles from Earth, I could completely hide the Earth behind my thumb. And now you're going to have to realize that behind my thumb could be the Earth, and there's, you know, over 5 billion people living there, all striving for the same things of life. And I looked at it and I thought how insignificant we really all are, and then how fortunate we all are that we have a place to live. And when I looked around, I took my eyes away from the Earth, I saw nothing but space. There is a sun and the moon is close by. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're inanimate as compared to the life that I knew on Earth. And I began to think that, you know, in reality, and we often say that I hope to go to heaven when we die. In reality, we go to heaven when we're born. Mm-hmm. We arrive on a body with the proper mass that has the gravity that can contain water and an atmosphere, the very essentials for life. We're on a body that's orbiting a star, just the proper distance, not too far out to be too cold, not too close in to be too hot, just to the proper distance to be able to absorb the star's energy. And it was that energy in the beginning that caused life to evolve. Mm-hmm. And so we are a privileged group right now that this is, in my estimation, from the time I was born until I die, a factor of heaven. And if you want to really pursue that to the extreme, St. Peter was that doctor you saw when you first opened your eyes.
That's an interesting point.
But that's my sort of philosophy right now, that enjoy life right now. Think, you know, take a moment and look at what you have. I mean, go out and look at Lake Michigan, how nice it is on a sunny day, and the trees, and feel the breeze on your cheek, and know that, hey, you know, that God has really given us ability to be here. And I looked at the Earth from space on Apollo 8, more or less that God has given us a stage. Mm-hmm. He's given us a stage upon which to perform. Mm-hmm. And how the play turns out is really up to us. So that's my philosophy.
That being said, do you think there is life after life after life? You know, is there an afterlife?
No, in reality, I think our life and our heaven is the time that we're here on Earth.
Yeah.
I think that because the ability to enjoy this evolves over the eons to more and more people coming in and other people leave. And other people come in and other people leave. And in reality, just in the 5 or 6,000 years that humans have developed the brain enough to think about things like religion, pretty soon we'll get more of a fundamental belief of where we are and what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. So not necessarily a heaven as we kind of think of it. This is kind of it, maybe?
The happiness is now.
Mm-hmm.
The happiness now, and of course, there's a lot of sadness.
Mm-hmm.
But the happiness is now.
Was there ever a time, I mean, obviously science and religion have conflicted for forever, you know, or for a long, long time, for centuries. And was there ever a time when, and still there's this conflict between, you know, creationism versus, you know, evolution and whatnot. Was there ever a time when you thought, you know, Adam and Eve, that was the way that, that things came about, that creationism as laid out in the Bible was it?
I guess I take life from the point of a scientist. Mm-hmm. I look at things, how they evolved. It is a really one of, you know, longevity and things create their creation, but it's very, very slow over eons. And we see a lot of it if we go back. I mean, we can look at fossils of millions of years ago, and we can get some idea of how the Earth evolved itself. And so, and man, of course, I think evolved from a fundamental organism, you know, slowly on all fours, then slowly came up and upright, and then slowly. And it was only, I think, in the last maybe 10, 15,000, 20,000 years where the brain started to develop. And it's the one difference between animal and humans is that man developed intelligence. And that was a slow process until we see the intelligence that we are here today. And sometimes I think the development of science is far exceeding the development of man's what's the word I want to use? Technology is far exceeding sociology. That's the word I want to use. We are doing things now so fast that they are overcoming the ability to absorb. And sociology is slowing down. That makes things difficult. We have conflict. We have the ability to instantaneously talk to somebody halfway around the world or put our thoughts in there. And so I think there's a time when things will be either overcome or we get so technical that we overpower ourselves and we cause our own demise.
Yeah. Backing up to Presbyterianism, if I'm not mistaken, there are elements of predestination sort of in the roots of Presbyterianism. Was that ever anything that you thought about in terms of whether we're sort of preordained to live certain lives and do certain things?
Well, I think that the religion, in essence, and if we want to take Presbyterianism, one of the values of it, I think is designed to help a person through life, whether there's things are preordained or not. I've had some very fortunate incidents, or really one that I had no control over. I never planned it. When I was graduating from high school, I had no money to go to college. Absolutely no money to go to college. And then the Navy, finding itself short of naval aviators, decided to start a program and sending high school graduates to college. And that's how I got my education. Before I went to the Naval Academy, I went to the University of Wisconsin, and then I finally managed to get into the Naval Academy. So it was a hit or miss. I tried the Naval Academy one time, and I was third all in it. And then when I finally went to college on this other Navy program, I tried again, and I was first all in it. And then after I started my flight training, I suddenly got orders to the Naval Academy. So, I mean, things I didn't plan for, things that just happened.
And they worked out.
And they worked out, whether they were preordained or whether they were, you know, just the way things go. The chaos theory, that some things come and go and we have problems.
A lot of people don't go to church today or any sort of, you know, whether it's synagogue or church or temple or whatever. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, I think it's a good thing. I go to church. Even though I have these ideas of my own existence and how I view God, because I believe in God, but I kind of think the modern, and I say modern religions, Islam, Christianity, Judaism, started maybe 6,000-7,000 years ago, slowly evolved, because as man's brain got to be more complicated, and they began to think of, why am I here? What's happening? They look at the space and they see the stars, and they think, is there something happening that I can't control or overseeing what I'm doing? And that slowly developed the religions, starting with paganism. You know, there were gods of war, gods of life and or growth, and there were all kinds of gods that people would pray to, hoping things would happen. And that was slowly the beginning, until finally some developed religions started to come in. And then today we're in a very sophisticated area of these religions. However, we still have a long way to go, I think, to really think. And so I believe that some aspect has looked at this whole thing, because we are only one little Earth in the universe. You know, even what we can see in our own galaxy. There are at least 800 exoplanets are now somewhere around stars. So there must be other life as we know it, or at least something that is living that can think besides ourselves. And so how did this all happen? Something much greater than what our present religions now teach us about Jesus and things like that. But this is only a local phenomenon that we believe in. But someplace else, something else is happening.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you sort of believe in creationism in a way, in terms of that God was maybe the spark, and then things sort of evolved, certainly here in their own way and maybe elsewhere. Is that?
Well, I think you're right. I think that's the way that I would see it. Evolution is the word I would use. Mm-hmm. Things slowly evolved as to where we are today.
Climate change. I mean, you're a science guy, and somebody who's been in the atmosphere and beyond. I mean, so it's become more of a religious discussion too. It used to be just sort of a science thing, and then you have people that deny that it's a problem, that the environment is changing and getting worse and whatnot. But then you've also had religious leaders speak up and say, we have a moral obligation to address this and think about this and do something about it. What do you think about that?
Well, there's lots of basic happenings that are really brought into a religious context. I mean, they use religion as a thing for something else. My value of climate change is this. There is climate change. We are getting warmer. There's no doubt about it. But where we're sitting right now, here in Highwood, Illinois, was a glacier. 12,000 years ago, a glacier. And so in those days, it was a lot colder here. At least there was a lot more ice and snow. In fact, how the Western Hemisphere got populated was the people coming over on the ice bridge from Asia. And then eventually, you know, wandered down here a thousand. So I think that we're in a period now of warming ever for the last 12,000, 13,000 years, and we'll probably get to some point where then finally we'll come back again. And that might be the subtle rotations of the Earth around the sun over a period of time. There might be some slow. I think that there is an effect of exhaust carbon dioxide. But it's in reality rather minor, because a volcano would put out, a very active volcano would put out so much carbon dioxide, more so than the decades of automobile exhaust. And so we're starting to take climate change in a religious thing, where it's not. It's a natural thing that is part of life itself.
Okay. You mentioned you still go to church. What denomination is still Presbyterian?
Presbyterian, okay. Right here in Lake Forest. And I go because it has a lot of positive effects. Even though I kind of think in reality there are other factors that are more prominent. But I think what religion teaches you is well worth listening to. But you have to remember, if you want to take a look at the history of religion, it's not all good.
Right.
I mean, religion itself has caused more distraught, more problems to this day. Just take a look at the Middle East. Take a look at the problems they had in Ireland, mm-hmm. just between the Catholics and the Protestants. And even today, the people are divided here as to, you know, their religion, you know, it. Look at either pro-life or pro-choice, pro-life, or you know, based on something perhaps of basis on a religious content of more than anything else.
Yeah, true. A lot of conflict over the years, right? You and your astronaut colleagues famously read Genesis. From outer space, and
that was so appropriate at the time. It wasn't our idea to begin with, but it was because in the beginning, and just what I was telling you before, in the beginning, life created God created the earth and the heavens.
Christmas Eve, right?
Yeah, Christmas Eve. A movie scriptwriter couldn't have done a better job.
Right.
Couldn't have done a better job. Everything, you know, 1968, you're probably too young, but 1968 here was a very bad year in the United States. War was going on, and there were assassinations, and there was, riots on the campuses.
Yeah. It's a crazy time. So that was a Bible verse from Genesis that you guys read. What do you have, even today, a favorite or a least favorite or most favorite, story or passage from the Bible?
Well, I think that what we said around the moon on Christmas Eve is probably what I retain the most.
Okay. Can people derive benefit from the Bible? I mean, there's a lot that people disagree. Is this literal or is this figurative? What were the authors really meaning, and is it the exact word of God, etc.? Is there relevance in the Bible, do you think, today?
Well, yes, there's relevance. There's a lot of controversy about how the Bible was written, and years after Jesus had died, and how much is myth and how much is actual. But the main thing about the Bible is not exactly what the story tells you, is how people get comfort from it. And as long as they enjoy this and helps them in their lifestyle and living, then the Bible is a very important part of their life.
How would you explain your belief system from as a kid till now? How has it sort of changed or evolved?
Well, I think I was, as millions of kids were, normal churchgoers and believed what I heard in church. And as I had mentioned in our earlier part of the conversation, my values and my thoughts after Apollo 8 changed drastically as to really what our position in life is.
Okay. What else would you want to add? Is there anything else that I'm not touching on?
No, I think you've covered just about everything of my thoughts with regards to religion.
Or faith. And one last thing I'd ask is what sort of, you've lived a long life, you've seen a lot of things, and you've sort of had this very interesting, melding of faith upbringing, but also science as an adult. And lesson or advice would you give the world? I mean, what sort of wisdom you've derived, any sort of, piece of wisdom that you would pass along?
Well, the one piece of wisdom that I would certainly show, I would say, stop and think right now. Look around. It's not going to get any better than it is right now. You're alive. The sun is shining. The leaves are on the trees. The water is over there. Feel that soft breeze coming on your cheek. And realize, so enjoy what you have, regardless of what your situation is. It's better than the alternative.
that's good advice. Well, thank you so much for doing this, Captain Lovell. It was a pleasure to chat with you.
My pleasure.
Take care.